to the Oregon Transportation Commission. I mean, that was the sort of model.
And where are they housed? Where is this authority housed?
It is a separate department, a separate agency. Yeah, it's split off mostly from DHS and has the same status in the administration DHS has. Director appointed by the governor, reporting to the governor. You'll see that. Tom, which are the sections on the board? How far are we?
The authority starts on, the board runs through section 10, which gives us duties, and the authority starts in section 11.
Section 11.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, do you want me to just
follow questions? Let's keep going. Yeah.
Okay. Section 2 simply staggers the terms of the board.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to do this, but I think we're trying to figure our way through this. Do we have some preliminary ideas of like how much responsibility these boards will have? I mean, in terms, is this like a
you'll see in sections
full time job or okay?
Yeah, we chose not to deal with that question. Although we chose not to take one of the models. There were two models proposed in the health fund board report. One which would be like the parole board, where the people are full time employed board. We decided not to do that. But you'll see, the board's expected to meet once a month as a minimum, so it's more than a board that meets three times a year. It's sort of an intermediate.
Thank you. Section 3 allows the board appointment to become effective upon signature of the bill in advance of other sections of the bill. Section 4 defines the
Section 4? Or Section 3, I'm sorry.
Section 4 defines...
What's 3, Tom? I didn't...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. 3 allows the board to be appointed immediately upon signature in advance of other sections of the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, in the where it says U.S. residents, is it possible to use a more standard?
You're back on 4.
Section 4?
Yeah, I hadn't gotten through 3 yet. We'll be to 4
Come on,
in a minute.
Mr. Chair. Let's go.
I'm trying to keep up with you guys. It's been my problem all session. Okay. 3, everything all right?
Yeah. Section 4 defines the membership of the board and the requirements for who or the type of individual that can serve on the board. The proposed amendments do a number of things. First of all, requires board members to be U.S. residents and have lived in Oregon for 1 year. It modifies the definition of what it means to be employed in the health care system and removes the requirement that one member be a physician. And
you got into a problem with the one member being a physician by getting the board would now be 73 members if we had one of everything that people have suggested we put on it, including two left-handed people and one bald person, which was us. So he said to solve that problem and leave this to the discretion. It's hard to imagine that the governor would name such a board without having a physician included. Just speak up. That'd be great. Let's speak.
Dan, I appreciate that. I'll just go ahead. What's the reason for not gainfully employed in health care in the prior 12 months?
The fact that a majority will not be?
Yeah.
Well, it was the health fund board report suggested that this not be stacked by the healthcare
providers.
Industry.
Yeah.
Well, by the healthcare industry.
I get it. Thank you.
My comment is instead of use U.S. residents, use U.S. citizens.
So you would prefer not to have legally, because we could have folks who are legally here in this country who
been here for a
long time.
Yeah. But no, this is, we are in the United States, and I prefer to have U.S. citizens be on the board. And the residency, is, I think, important, too. But I think it'd be nice if they were U.S. citizens.
Are we keeping notes? Tom, will you keep it running?
I am. I need some advice on, are we, how do you want to handle a suggestion?
Let's at least get the issues that we want to handle. Perhaps before they my guess is they haven't begun drafting these things.
No,
they have not.
What would be the sense on U.S. citizens? And
well, my only concern with that is, and I understand the representative's point, but because of the topic area, I could easily see a legal resident someone who's in this country for many years, who has legal residency, is an expert on health policy, but they're a British citizen, for example.
Okay. I acknowledge that. Legal resident would be acceptable.
Okay, so legal resident and or
citizen. Legal resident.
We use that term legal resident somewhere else. Let's put that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
I was going to suggest, if you want to look back and what you've already, previous legislators have done, SB 3 from last year has a very nice definition of that defines what I think you're after.
Okay.
And I'll get that to you, and you can
look at it. But let's put that in.
Say?
Oh.
It says something like legal or resident.
Well, the term
legal resident. Yeah. We had to go through this with Healthy Kids. We had to come up with a nice way of talking about it.
Wow. Okay. Got it. Anything else on four?
Yeah. On sub 1C. So I assume the point there is we also don't want, sorry to be crass, too many low-income folks on this? Or?
No, you don't.
Not too many consumers?
No, it's not
or?
Too many consumers. You don't want a majority being Medicare. You don't want a majority being PEB beneficiaries. You don't want a majority being OEB beneficiaries.
This says publicly funded state health plan. Is that meant to encompass Medicare?
No.
Okay.
But you probably don't want a majority Medicare either, in that sense, because it's going to be affecting a lot of people in the state.
You don't want a cohort, basically taking over the commit. You want this to be representative of, and we don't address geography, but you want diversity on your board, and quite frankly, if you have five union members, it very easily could be hijacked, or a perception could be hijacked. Same, that's why we put in the health delivery system. You don't want to be hijacked by the medical field.
I certainly don't.
Well, would it matter? Why is the word state there? Why wouldn't we just drop that out? And you don't want the majority of publicly funded health plan people. I mean, I wouldn't want a majority of Medicare people on there either.
But you
absolutely
might end,
not represent.
You might end up with one Medicaid person, one OEB person, one state employee who would therefore be a PEB, and two Medicare people, and that would be excluded under this.
Yes, and that's exactly the point.
But two Medicare people in nine wouldn't be a problem.
No, it would be a problem.
One
majority,
state employee in nine.
Majority works. Would be a problem. I'm not sure isolating state health plan. Federally, government funded health plan.
What's the sense of the committee? All right, let's leave. If there are some things we absolutely agree on, let's take them up. If there aren't, let's note them for the record that we have them on the list, and when we get the actual amendments, we'll deal with formally testing.
And I understand what the representative is saying. We don't want to have a majority of folks who could somehow skew the conversation. I think it's going to be an interesting ask on someone's application when they apply to be appointed. It's different from asking what your background is professionally. Someone's going to have to say, and I get my health insurance benefits this way, or my health coverage is this way.
Where my brother lives on my ethics form.
Yes,
so
we do.
Where does he live? We've been trying to figure out.
I don't have a brother.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what you say.
I thought it was down the street here.
And can we just make the designation that it's any one publicly funded entity?
Why don't we all think about this? We'll get it back. When we get back the amendments, we'll get back a list of the things that we raised at this meeting. Those things we settle, we'll settle.
Mr.
Yes, sir.
So did the health fund board suggest, the report suggests that we not have designated spots on this board? Because I'm not sure I'm ready to give up on that idea yet.
Which designated slots would
you like? Just in general, that there be representation. I mean, we're saying here what should not dominate, but in terms of designated spots on the board, now I realize we don't want to have, you know, 100 designated spots, but still, in some sort of broad areas, do we... I'm not sure I want necessarily to leave that entirely up to the governor.
Why don't you be considering, as we get forward to that, an alternative to this that we can put in front of us? Because we have had, I think I've literally had, how could you do this without a nurse? How could you do this without two union members? How could you do this without a doctor? How could you do this without... Well, I had count of about 8 different ones. And rather than trying to figure out which of those 8 ones, it seemed to me that politically the best bet is to leave it open. If we can find an acceptable way to deal with this, I think that would be great. It was beyond me, and basically I think let's think about it, come up with some solutions, maybe circulate them and these things among us before we don't really have to wait for that. Let's have on many of these issues, if we can circulate proposals, we have time to.
Mr. Chair, is this similar to any language related, maybe say how the Oregon Transportation Commission, I'm not that familiar, but you know, some commissions, like, they really line it out by they have to be from this place and that place and blah, blah, and some don't do very much.
That is like
it's actually SB 329.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. And we had some nice aspirational language in right. 329 about serving the public interest of the state, and that's missing from here. That might be another direction to look at. So we're not creating slots, but we are asking the governor, requiring the governor to appoint people who would kind of serve the public interest.
And as I remember, the Transportation Commission, because of the nature of their task, has geographically geographic representation. So I think 4 members come from different geographic areas.
Mr. Chair, moving on.
I was just thinking, I'm trying to remember that aspirational language. It's something to look back at.
That's good.
Section 5 allows the governor to appoint both the chair and the vice chair by title, defines the quorum, and establishes the meeting schedule.
Are only the chair and vice chair subject to confirmation by the Senate?
No, the entire board is.
All members.
All members. Right. Have back on. Yeah.
Thank you. That's fine.
All members are subject to confirmation.
And I would just add, you know, this is why you see fiscals for the health authority, 5-3, when it says you have to meet in every congressional district every 2 years. I mean, it's calling for road visits, so that provides also part of the fiscal for the health authority. So just putting that up.
No, and that fiscal, I think, shows up in the governor's bill that continued the health fund board, and it was, so I assume that fiscal will transfer to this one.
I mean, that's nickel and dime. I think there's some other stuff in here that blows up the fiscal.
Really?
Yes.
I think it'll just be done voluntarily. Basically. I don't see why it has to. I don't understand all this fiscal stuff anyway.
Almost what we work.
That's right. Mr. Chair, Section 6 on page 6, the original bill allowed the board to hire staff that reported directly to the board. After discussions, it was felt that the authority itself would have all the competent staff, most notably the director as well as Uber. And so we struck the ability for the board to hire staff.
Similar to the way the department staffs
right.
The Oregon Health Policy Commission and the Health Fund Board and other places.
If they have any issues, they can go to staff or to the governor.
They actually have great staff in the Health Fund Board.
Am I noting you're taking authority away from the authority already?
Before we even gave it to them, that's exactly right. No, not taking it away from the authority, taking it away from the board.
Oh, from the board.
Giving it to the authority.
Oh, okay.
On
authority didn't have enough authority.
Section 7, Mr. Chair, is one where council, the language in here gives the board, as the policymaking body, the ability to adopt rules. Council, we had originally discussed not giving the board that authority, we had originally discussed not authorizing the board to adopt rules and leaving it to the authority to adopt the rules. Council was very adamant that if you're going to have the board as a policymaking board, they needed the ability to write rules. And so this is one where from the original amendments you saw had this section struck. It is unstruck because council was very adamant on it.
Go ahead.
Section 8, as originally written, this section directed the board to have 3 subcommittees and then identified that the subcommittees were not entitled to compensation. After discussion about why 3 subcommittees and not 5 or 2, about exactly what the makeup of these subcommittees would be and about what their specific duties were, it was felt that it would be better to simply give the board the authority to appoint as many or as few subcommittees, technical advisory committees, to do whatever the board felt they needed to do and provide input.
One thing we specifically didn't do following the health fund board, had a sort of hybrid process where the chairs of their 7 subcommittees were sort of members of the board, and it seemed a bit confusing. They didn't exactly have a vote, but they came to meetings and they spoke, and it wasn't clear. So we thought specifically not to do that, to let the board figure out what subcommittees it needed. These were subcommittees that the ones on there were mentioned in the report. We decided it was just better to let the board and the authority figure out what subcommittees they needed.
In line 2, it starts out with technically advisory committees. Should it be technical advisory committees, or is this a term that I'm not yet familiar with and I must become familiar with?
It's a term of art you need to figure out how to use.
I'm working on it.
Bad adverb.
I think I just used it in a sentence.
They're only technically advisory.
Technically. It's technically challenged.
Thank you. Well, my typing is technically challenged.
It was a snotty comment, but it was well taken.
You want snotty?
I'm with you.
I'll drag out the jersey, okay?
There you go.
So my only concern about, I do think there's efficiency in not trying to detail which committees, but making sure that some of the, when I saw these particular committees pulled out, it was a prioritization of these particular issues. So I don't know if we want to make sure, if indeed these were some of the priorities we wanted to pull out, payment reform, workforce, the pooling type thing, making sure that they're showing up somewhere else in the duties as succinctly. And I think they are, but there was a reason you had these committees there, and I think it's because you want to make sure those particular things at least got addressed. So.
Well, the reason they were there because they were in the report. They had a reason, yeah.
Well, right, there was a reason on those
particular why were they pulled out?
That was actually my suggestion.
Because,
and also it made sense because I'm not sure these were the right committees. I'm not sure. I mean, if you're naming these and you're not naming others.
Yeah. I would agree, though, that those are important.
All important issues.
That,
let's see if they're, I think you'll find they're covered later.
Okay.
And let's see, but if not. We also thought about saying, including these, among others, or something.
Or for example.
No, that's a bad strategy.
I don't think council
will. Council will way out of their finger.
Really, they're going to let us, for example.
Mr. Chairman, Section 9 on page 9, as originally written, would have allowed the board to appoint other committees. Since we have decided to give the board the authority to appoint as many as they want, Section 9 is no longer necessary. Section 10 on...
This is where we're saying what they do.
Yeah. Section 10... On pages 10, 11, and 12 are all of the duties assigned to the board. This is the board's duties. There were a number of technical corrections made that drafting errors. There were some dates that were added to specifically say we want this done sort of as a first priority. And so they have some duties have specific dates to be completed. We added some language that requires the use of a statewide prescription drug formulary to the list of considerations as they look at insurance reform. And we added language to ensure the persons receiving insurance premium assistance. This assumes at some point down the future that we will have a premium assistance program for those slightly better than poverty level people, but who generally can't afford health care.
Can we run through these? I think
this is important enough to...
Right. Yeah. This one is... Yeah.
I'll be happy.
Let's start from A and go through each one.
Okay. A simply says that they will be the policymaking body of the authority, which is established in the next section, and that they will govern the Quality Care Institute and the Oregon Healthcare Insurance Exchange, which are also established further on in the bill. B, they're charged with implementing a program to provide health care insurance premium to low and moderate income people residing... Premium assistance, thank you.
What's premium assistance? Is that a financial supplement?
Well, it's similar to FIA, which is an example of what happens. Families at different levels of income have different levels of state assistance. Actually, it's Medicaid-matched assistance, so that if you're at 210% or so, you get
scaled
a certain supplement, and if you're 290%, you get less. But it is to make it more affordable. The background on this and where this came from in the report, I believe, is the notion that if we ever do an individual mandate, it will be required to be subsidized for some parts of the population, and that might be an example.
Now, when I read this as a mandate to low and moderate income. Is that the way it reads?
As a mandate to...
Well, that we're going to provide this. We shall provide it. It says, implement a program to provide or make available. Is it provide or make available?
I have the same kind of question. It appears if that's a duty, it's almost independent of funding. I mean, I can see where funding would weigh heavily on that decision.
That's you betcha.
That's my point. That's my point.
If it's a duty, where are they going to get the money to duty it?
Can you add words subject to available funds, which is preeminent opt-out?
I think you have no choice but to have those words.
I'm not sure that LC would go for that. In my having come across this before and having raised the question in a Ways and Means subcommittee, essentially, if the state doesn't fund something that we're statutorily obligated to do, we don't do it. I mean, without the funding, it doesn't happen. And so I think you can almost presume that subject to funding on every requirement that we create.
Well, I'm not sure. On occasion, the state has been sued, and sometimes successfully, for not fulfilling mandates.
For sure. The most recent one, they were not successful.
Can't we just change implement to design?
How about that?
It's good for me.
Okay. Let's do that.
Are we changing?
Yeah.
To design.
Okay. Which word are you replacing?
The first word.
Implementation design.
Page 10, sub B.
Although I would hope we have implementation language somewhere further aligned with some kind of timeline.
To allow the implementation.
Right.
Yeah, I suppose there are two things here. One is one is responsibility, the other is the authority. And this is giving them authority to implement that program, not necessarily a requirement to do it. There are some things that are, well...
Designed for implementation?
No, this has implemented for them.
These are duties.
Yeah, duties versus duties. Authority, I don't know.
Sounds like responsibilities. Yeah,
sounds to do it.
Things they have
I'm going to go along with design at this point, because most of the stuff you're going to see here is going to have to come back to the 2011 legislature. It might as well be this one as well.
So, Mr. Chair, where we're on B there, I think you're going to have to, though. Do love my families. Probably legal residents of Oregon. I mean, I think families might...
Oh, persons legally?
Well, all low and moderate income legal residents. I think the families could be like, well, so if you don't have kids, you don't get it.
You're right.
Yeah.
Unless that's the policy intent.
So. I'm sorry?
Nothing. No.
You were kidding. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But that has to be for
person. So individual.
Yeah, person.
Individual.
Okay. C?
C is the first step towards trying to bring together some purchasing power of the state by having the board develop a plan for both the PEB and the OEB to achieve coordination between them and other state agencies that provide health care.
PEB and OEB currently reside in DAS with a board that manages them. There are going to be proposals. Representative Kotek, I want you to hear this one.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Currently, Webb and PEB reside in DAS, or their board reports to DAS. There are going to be proposals we'll have in front of us. This is not the time to do that. That would move PEB and OWEB administratively from DAS to the authority. That's something that would, since you're a board member on PEB, would be really useful if we're going to have that proposal in front of us. It's not here. And if we have a sense from you to help us understand whether it makes a difference.
Let's hope we're on the next page.
Oh, we're here already. Okay.
Although I have to be honest, I'm not sure I understand how C is written. So we're establishing by a certain date
health benefit
plans for individuals who are currently covered by PEB and OEB. I'm not quite sure we know what we're going
to do. The goal, was explained to me, was to make sure that we have a sort of a common benefit plan that is spread across government.
Or a set
of benefit plans, so that you don't run into one state agency going in one direction with a different set of co-payments or deductibles, and an agency going in a different direction to try and get some uniformity across governments.
What do you do with the
These words are right out of the report. Right?
Yeah.
These words are right out of the health fund board report.
Right, but I'm wondering if you can have to insert the word common health. Yeah. I mean, there has to be some commonality here because it's not necessarily, it's sort of implied but not clear from the way this is written.
If you had common before health, common health benefit plan. Yes. I think that does that.
May I ask why there's a date on this one and not on any of the other ones?
It was one of the highest priorities that the fund board had, was to start this process to merge these things.
Okay.
And the date, does it end December 30th?
It's
right before the legislature starts. I'm thinking maybe I just don't understand when you want to do it. If there was a thought other than just getting done.
January 1.
Because this is typical things that are supposed to come to the legislature, but 30 days, half September, and all the rest I can't remember.
Yeah.
31.
Yeah, it should be the 31st.
My suggestion is to blow up PEB and blow up OEB and merge them into one structure so that you don't have two administrative entities, because bigger's better.
I think my perception is to take PEB and OEB and other public employee plans and individual coverage and small group coverage and put them all in the same.
About one step at a time.
Yeah. What about Ron's compromise? Put the two together. That, might as well. As
this is the second step. I think the first step is to do this. The second step is to blow them up and put them together.
I would agree.
The third step is for everything else with them.
A little bit incremental, maybe. Because Representative Kotek wouldn't have another meeting to go to.
Thank you.
Incidentally, for the record, I met today with the director of PEB and OEB and got her absolutely serious promise. And in fact, she has scheduled it for a board meeting to take up the health savings account option and take a serious run at it. And Kotek is on the board. She couldn't schedule it for the March board meeting, but she has scheduled it for the one following it to start a serious discussion.
I appreciate that.
The one comment I would have, and I might want to check with the PEB folks and OEB, they're in the same office, is the date. Whether the date actually works from the cycle of how plan design is done and might work, we might want to have a date that fits the cycle of when they do their plan benefits.
That would be great.
Fine. I just don't know if that works.
Do you make a note on that?
Yeah.
Good.
But the goal was as soon as possible would be, and the question is when that might be. So.
D is a move to establish a uniform quality standards that all healthcare third parties and providers use as a way to start developing performance benchmarks so we can begin to compare results.
And then just a question about the Quality Institute. How does that relate to the Quality Institute?
This is part of it. This so is sort of a big picture.
The big picture? Okay.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not.
I'm not sure I understand what a Quality Institute is. So.
Well, neither do I. I mean, I quite frankly, I'm not quite sure why Oregon is trying to be independent when you have the rest of the world trying to or attempting to do the same stuff. And
don't be left behind.
Let's just stop, adopt some stuff that's already out there.
I would assume that's certainly where they would go. Keep going, Tom.
E is to establish clinical standards and guidelines. The reference is no longer accurate, and I will have to clean up the reference. But the goal is to set up specific standards and guidelines by which insurance plans operate under. And providers operate under.
Providers?
Yeah, I assume it's providers, not...
It is providers. And that reference is no longer good because you'll see that Section 18 is written, so it'll have to be cleaned up.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm still lost on D. So what is the one previous item? What are we trying to do there with establish quality performance benchmarks?
The position of the health fund board report is that there are four sets of problems: access, quality, and workforce.
Okay.
And they put in, they gave the authority, in this case, the authority board, and we put it in the board, tasks, if you will, to deal with all of those, not just access, because the argument is if you provide access and you haven't bent the cost curve, it's not sustainable, and if you have access to lousy care, it's not sustainable. So what this language all came out of the Health Fund Board report. It's very aspirational,
yes,
but it's an attempt to say, get to work in these areas.
Okay. It's aspirational, very, but not unrealistic. I just don't know how to read it.
It isn't. I think it's not unrealistic. I think it's unrealistic that they'll end up with the perfect model.
Oh, sure.
It says get to work on these things.
Okay.
I mean, and a concern I would have is when you dictate what the physician's clinical standards are, and at some point, then you might as well not have a physician, you just have an automaton, you know, using an algorithm to come up with a differential diagnosis in the course of treatment.
So, I mean, let's have that debate on a different day. I'd be happy to debate it with you. Because standards don't relate standards relate to how you approach clinical medicine, not how you make every decision.
I guess
not the time to have that.
The issue, though, is that it does start a piece of collecting bureaucracy. And let me just share one example. A bill I have circulating, Perry Center estimates that their child therapists spend 42% of their time filling out paperwork, doing administrative and reports. That's a ridiculous waste of time for relatively good reasons. But nonetheless, if we're not careful, we're going to have a bureaucracy that's very expensive to fund. And this is the kind of thing that subtly puts that in place, I fear.
There is an absolute assumption in the Health Fund Board report put there by physicians that there are better ways to provide to perform clinical services, and there are worse ways to provide clinical services. Okay. And that the best care is the care that's evidence-based and designed by a set of standards.
Okay.
I think that's all this language says. This is how they said it.
Okay.
In terms of, the truth is, you don't want to put in the statute the exact standards. You want to put in that'd be a problem.
F is to start to create community-centered health initiatives that will be focusing on critical behavior risk factors, and especially those that contribute to chronic diseases. Report back to the legislature on what's going on out in the community as a means to continue to refine how we deliver health care. G is to develop cost control mechanisms to start bending the curve. The goal is to start finding ways to reduce the cost of health care so that we are at medical CPI minus one
By 2015.
Why establish versus develop versus something else?
Well, I think we want to find out if they can actually figure out how to do that without telling them to put in place.
Well, we status other things above. I mean, when we're not quite sure what those exactly are.
I think we're not.
But.
I think
just,
we're not.
Just wondering why the differentiation.
Mr. Chair.
It does stand out by being different. Well, we just changed B to this language, right?
Yeah. I think the key question is can they actually do it? Or should they develop it?
What is medical CPI?
It's the same as general CPI. But it's an established government
right,
measure.
Right, but would we be asking them merely to make sure that the rate of inflation in medical expense is less than the rate of inflation of medical expense?
We were asking them to say that the rate of medical, the increase in the rate of medical expense in Oregon because of these actions turns out to be a bit less than the national average for the...
I see. Okay, so this is pretty modest in its...
I think this is a doable thing.
Okay.
It's not
That's
sustainable.
Helpful.
Because medical CPI is an unsustainable...
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is not the ultimate answer.
This is not cost containment, really. This is just being slightly better than the national average.
This is slightly bending the cost curve.
Thank you.
And 2015 is just to make sure we're getting it done.
Well, a lot of the goals of the health fund board were aimed at 2015. That's the 95% of the uninsured covered and that sort of stuff. So I think that was... 7 years off, it seemed like a long time in 2008. It seemed like so long when you start trying to do it.
So we're not going to change it to establish?
No. I'm happy this way, or if it's the sense of the committee, we'll change it to establish.
I'm happy with this.
I like it all.
I think we should try to be as consistent as we can be.
Change them all to develop?
How about take our best shot?
Well, it compromises every other one.
There you go.
I think there are other...
I'm sorry. But
I like establish.
Talk about it.
I mean, I like establish as much here in G as I do, say, in D. They seem quite parallel.
Ready? Senator Cannon?
I have reservations about that simply because when we're talking cost control, we're talking develop a program rather than establish it. Establish it could come by decree and, you know, health provider X, you need to slash your prices by X. And I think that's potentially a slippery slope. And I think we protect ourselves a little bit with that. Ron's looking at me, but I think we protect ourselves a little bit by saying develop rather than establish.
I think we're on it.
Well.
Okay. So, Cannon?
Just to say, I think there's, if this level of authority is troublesome, there will be later. anything of these amendments. I mean, if we, you know,
I think that's why I was willing to change to the developer, yeah, because I think this is not worth the fight.
Yeah, I sort of get that.
We can fight elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if we circle it when we come back the next round,
another discussion,
it'll be apparent after the entire package that we want to go one way or the other.
That's a good point. Very judicious.
Mr. Chair, I want this to go on the public record that, you know, I'm at the table because I'm assigned to the committee, but I'm at the table, you know, in good faith to try to make this thing better. But even, you know, after I make my attempt, there's no guarantee that I would ultimately vote for it. But, I mean, it truly is. I'm here in good faith to make this thing better.
And I want to put on the record that that's all I asked of you, and you've worked hard to do that. And I hope when we're done, you'll feel confident about voting for it.
Especially if it stays developed rather than.
You know, I guess I need to. We're being covered in a voice only.
Correct.
I think I'd better recognize. Speak up, and then I'll recognize who you are. So, listeners following will have a better chance. That last disclaimer was Representative Maurer, Vice Chair Maurer. Okay. Mr. Burns.
H is simply go back to Congress and get them to do something. Get waivers as necessary, whatever we need to do to allow us to have a comprehensive health reform plan.
Just as the background piece, how big do we anticipate a lot to be done, or just moderate lifting?
I'm sorry.
On
this section?
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand how big a job you think.
This word comes from a lot of the discussion we had in leading up to 329 with people like Governor Kitzhaber saying that if you can't change the way Medicare is done, you really can't change the healthcare system in Oregon. So we obviously as a state don't have authority to do that, but there are two federal laws that absolutely affect our flexibility. One is Medicare, and the other is ERISA. And I think this is a sense that start working with the federal legislation to change things. Now, all this could be trumped in a minute, as we said, by Obama and Congress doing something that many of us think is unlikely they will do.
I'm just trying to get up to speed.
Yep, no. That's the purpose of this. And we're going to take as long at this as we need to get to where we all at least know what we're voting on and why, whether we're voting yay or nay.
I ask that there be a minimum benefit package established for the insurance that is ultimately offered through the insurance exchange. And we will further on get some more detail about what that package will look like.
But the assumption being that there can be a minimum benefit package and then there can be
add-on. Do we have to call it a minimum?
Well, I thought we got that, like, because nobody knew what essential meant.
Well, I don't like the word, like the groovy benefit package, or
we call it Charlie.
The Charlie.
Well, you wouldn't need to identify it. It could be a benefit
package.
I guess the problem that I have with this, and it is dealt with later, is, you know, one of the arguments is that you create cost containment by exclusions. But I'm not much of a fan of exclusions because once in a while you need it.
Well, I don't think that is an assumption, actually.
Okay.
I think if you don't change practice, you're not changing the cost curve. And simply moving around who pays for something isn't really reducing costs.
Can you give me an example?
Well, if I take out MRIs from coverage and you need an MRI, I haven't reduced the cost of medical care in the state. I simply shifted out of the insurance pool into your pocket, and the cost is exactly the same.
Yes.
I think if we figure out a way that you only need one MRI in a course of treatment for, let's say, cancer, rather than four, and it still does just as well, then you've done something to reduce the cost curve. I think that's the
But that's not a benefit package.
No, it's not a benefit package.
Okay, thank you.
So the answer would be, I think where the benefit package, I don't think this is the cost containment mechanism, I think that's the insurance mechanism. The way the benefit package can reduce costs is by design to enhance and incent more efficient ways of providing care as opposed to less expensive. So we have a benefit package that incents you to get preventive care and primary care and keeps you out of the emergency room in the hospital, then you're using a benefit package to bend the cost curve. And that's a piece of the design that I think we need to look at carefully. And the Health Fund Board talks specifically about encouraging preventive care, primary care, and chronic disease management as a way of saving expensive emergency room and hospital costs.
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Kotek, since you're wanting us to identify ourselves. I think there was a lot of attachment to the word essential as a value. And so minimum is not quite the same thing as essential.
Help me understand. I took it out in, I mean, I was willing to do it in response to rejection because I really didn't know what essential was code for.
Essential meaning you need these services because they will help the recipient have the best outcome. For example, a minimum package could be, you might not have mental health services as a minimum package.
Or even hospital services.
Or hospital services. But if a policy choice is, it is essential that you have these components because the way they interact and the way they will save you over time in terms of prevention are things, and that's different from saying a list of services versus we value these are essential. So
I hear what you're saying.
So if we don't want a coded word, well, the concept is something that's basic, right? So a kind of basic as opposed to a basic plan that individuals could enhance in some ways. Is that what we're thinking?
I think basic is probably a better, more used term, more term of art.
Maybe. And maybe, again, to Representative Thompson's comment, once we get a little further along around, I don't know if this comes up again. I think it does, so I don't know. There'll be reference back to maybe what we mean by that, so I don't know.
Yeah, there is.
I think this is triggered by Kitzhaber's perspective that that everybody ought to have a right to a basic benefit package, I think is the term he uses, and everybody also have the right to buy more than that if they want to buy more than that on the market. I think this is, my guess is this reference is that sense of what is, what everybody ought to have as a minimum, which might be mental health and might not be mental health. But
something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, let's mark this as something to look at, that word. Would everybody feel more comfortable at least to start this discussion with basic rather than minimum? And then we can discuss the extent to which that's different. Would that make you more comfortable?
I
think it's a better term.
Tom, why don't we ask her to change that?
On page 11, we're continuing with section 10. J is the reforms in the insurance market, and it lists a number of things that the board is to look at as they try to find ways to reform the insurance market in Oregon. They will report back to the legislature on their findings. The first one is mandatory health insurance. The second one is a way to
pay. So-called individual mandate.
Right. Second one is a way to pay for it.
This does not propose it. This proposes that the that the plan include how this, the extent to which this is and how it works.
Do we need to amend sub B to track the language on the previous page? That is the same. If you look at section 10, sub 1, sub B, we have the same language as section J, sub B, but we haven't made the corresponding amendment there.
So should we just say we're doing this?
May we add another one?
Another what?
Another bullet?
Let's get down to I and let's see what we're missing here.
C is to recognize that there may need to be some means to encourage health insurance paid for by employers, so it can't be dumped into the public plan. And so the question is, do you have a payroll tax or some other method by which you can incentivize employers to keep their health insurance? That sentence is written backwards, I guess. But D is to look at the insurance exchange for premium assistance and advanced reform, other reforms in the health insurance market, and we can talk more about the exchange as we get down the road.
It's hard to imagine expanding it before you've
that's true.
Developed it.
E has been struck. There is no more public owned health insurance plan there.
It's somewhere
it comes
else.
Down on K. It shouldn't be, it should, anyway, you'll see why. F is, again, our basic benefit package to make sure that it's offered through the exchange. G is an interoperable electronic health records. And I is the use of the common statewide formulary for prescription drugs. All of these are designed to put a box around work done by the board as they look at how we might change or reform the insurance market in Oregon.
Senator Maurer? You want a J under I?
No.
Oh, I think
I have another bullet.
Another bullet somewhere else?
After M?
Bad. Yeah, so can...
Yeah, okay.
After M, okay.
Okay. Moving on to K, this is where we put the words study report back regarding the publicly owned health plan to operate under the same rules and regulations as all health insurance plans sold in Oregon.
I object to that, but that's okay. My objection is noted. This is Representative Maurer.
I'm trying to find where this thing starts. I've lost what these are all about.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, these are the duties. Okay.
The duties of the board.
Got it. Study and report.
Yes.
You object to study and report?
Well, it's
better than creation of, isn't it?
Okay.
Waste what?
Better than creation of, isn't it?
Well, it's better than. Let's go on.
Noted.
Let's go on.
What is the direction here? Is this to build a safe type organization for medical care, or what? I don't know what the.
The notion is to have an exchange where private health insurers compete under a controlled market, and that there be a publicly defined option inside that competition.
Would that be like workman's comp under safe versus private kind of thing?
It could be. I think that's a semi-public, but okay. Yeah, it could be something like that.
Okay. Looking for the vision.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Canterbury. Under the same rules and regulations, I don't see... which rules and regulations? Because obviously some of them are going to be different if it's a publicly owned.
There was concern from the health insurance industry expressed mm-hmm. that they would have to come into a market regulated by their competition, in this case the public, or the public entity. The intention of this is to create the notion that the authority will regulate this market, say with an essential benefit package. This is the minimum benefit package, or the basic benefit package. And you need to have community rating, and you need to have guaranteed issue. This says they all operate under those same rules, whether they're the public plan or the private plan operating in this. What it doesn't say is that the only place people can buy health insurance. But in the exchange, everybody in the exchange, and there will be some advantages to being there, operates under the same rules.
To include tax law?
Whatever.
I'll see how that's feasible, but I think they still miss it. That's what I'm sorry, I just kind of.
But they're just going to investigate the feasibility. That's what they're going to investigate.
I guess that's true. That's part of what they do.
No.
Because I just.
I have a question. This is Denver. Tom, so why was K moved out of the previous list, since it's basically doing the same thing, right? It's studying and reporting to the legislature.
One is looking at the insurance market as it exists. The other is creating an entity that will sell insurance under whatever J develops that is publicly owned.
It could be in either place.
There's a date difference. This is canon. J requires the report to come by December 31st, 2000. No, no, it's the same date,
same
too,
date.
For 2011 Legislative Assembly. All right.
I am?
I have comments on L and M. Why develop plans to... I think this looks like a deft rhetorical move, but I would advocate deleting the first three words of both L and M.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
Move.
I would propose deleting the first three words of
L and M. Move Cabin O-Web into the authority of
Power. Yeah, if we want, because I think that's the intent.
That is the intent.
That is
the
intent.
Sure, that's fine.
Would it be desirable in there to add in a value statement, something like without erosion of benefits? I can add PEB and OWEB in directly if I don't have to worry about if I'm giving them the same benefits. The cost isn't a factor.
This isn't doing anything except moving it from DAS, the thing I said before, into the health authority. It's the administrative movement of it. It doesn't change the board, doesn't change the way it operates at this point. It simply moves it, and now it reports up the line to DAS. This moves it up the line to the OHA. It doesn't have anything.
Should we say that from DHS into authority? Bye. Should we state that in there then? Move PEB and OWEB from DHS into the
It isn't in DHS.
DAS.
DAS.
It's a DAS.
But this is, Kenimer, it just, why isn't the language consolidate PEB and OEBB into the authority?
Because this is simply we move a bunch of stuff into the authority. This is just moving this into the authority along with...
There's nothing to prohibit them from consolidating it in the future.
Or anything. This isn't a major. This isn't a policy thing. This is an administration.
Okay. That's a function. It's a functional.
At times, shouldn't we put it somewhere else where we have all those things that move into?
You're right. It should really go over into Section 20.
Yeah.
It really should. The question, somebody told me it was going to be a difficult move, which is why I put it here, but you're right, it really belongs.
We found since then it isn't. That it's, I didn't know how, when we started this, PEB related to the executive department of the government. I knew it had a separate board, and what we've since learned is that there's a board, and the board reports, administratively it's handled in DAS. This would simply put it, Representative Kotek, are we right on this one? Am I? You're on the board there. You know. You don't know?
Well, just because it administratively it seems simple doesn't mean the same thing as, you know, saying you're going to take control out of the executive branch in that regard into DAS into another version. No, that's true, though. The board makes decisions, and...
And it has whatever authority it has.
I'd have to go back and look at the statute, to be honest. My impression is they have a lot of authority.
The board
does.
Not DAS.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think they would have that same authority. I think the intention here is to not change the way it works, but simply to move where it reports in the executive department.
Structurally.
And this is Maurer, and I'd say my intention is to get rid of PEB because it makes no sense. If you're moving, if you get to where you want to be with the exchange, then there's no reason for PEP.
Yeah, and that's downstream. No. But in the interim, we're talking about creating an authority that has all the states, has in it the current state responsibility. That's what we've tried to do for things that are healthcare related.
Okay.
And you move public health from DHS to the authority without changing what public health does or anything else. It just moves it from where it is to somewhere else. And that's the notion here. It's not to change anything.
Well,
it's just a yes.
This is Kotek. If the purpose of having PEB and OEB under the authority is to have intentionality about how we do healthcare in the state, you might at some point need to look at the how the authority is driven in the PEB and OEB. I mean,
absolutely.
If you say, well, it's up to the PEB and OEB board members to decide, but the Oregon Health Authority board says, we're not in agreement with that. But that's maybe a later discussion.
No, absolutely. I think the intention, I've been told over and over, the health fund board is to move the purchasing power into a central place where you can use the state's purchasing power to change the way healthcare is delivered. So I think in the 2011 session, we're going to have a lot of these critical policy decisions to be talking about this stuff. Okay. We will take out the development plans too, and we'll move this section to section 20. Is that
right?
All right.
May I just say something about the deadline? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. With the deadline you have now, this would assume by the end of the upcoming biennium, of which we are establishing a budget, this would happen. Do we get any? Is it better to have it July 1 versus June 30th from a fiscal perspective?
I don't know the answer. Bruce basically said
for the beginning of the next fiscal year.
Yeah, it was. So that's July 1. That Bruce said he thinks it needs 2 years to do this, and that's simply what we're trying to give it. I don't know which date matters.
And then M is to assure all Oregonian residents have health insurance by 2015.
And again, I propose striking the first three words of them.
Sure.
Unless that's not what we intend.
I don't know how they can assure it.
Is mandatory implied in there? I don't know what we're trying to do. You have an opportunity for insurance, or everybody will be signed up for insurance?
The intention?
Yeah.
Actually, I thought the health fund board was 95% of the uninsured, but the intention is to have everybody having access to health insurance. Now, if
access to is the word phrase that's not in there.
If Bill Gates, who probably hasn't moved to Oregon yet, decides he doesn't want to buy health insurance, I think we probably wouldn't make a point of that.
Some states are developing mandatory plans. So.
Well, I think this might end up being a mandatory plan.
Isn't that what we're seeing in
A? It's whatever is going to develop, and we'll see what comes to us in 2011.
That's what we see in
this
study.
That's what
they
yeah, there it is.
Yeah, it's a little redundant, isn't it?
It is a lot redundant.
It's redundant, which is even worse than just ordinary redundancy.
Well, how about if we put the by
2015
up to A? And then we could just collapse, get rid of them.
Let's clean it up.
Be good.
Don't like it.
Want anybody have access to health insurance?
That's a different thing.
That's totally different.
Totally different thing. A requirement by a certain date is different than saying we're going to ensure everyone has access to health insurance. So
the debate we're going to have in 2011 is, do we have mandatory individual mandatory health insurance? And the debate will come about because of discussions of, can you really operate an exchange that has guaranteed access and community rating without having everybody in it? And I think the answer is you probably cannot do it without an individual mandate. That doesn't talk about an employer mandate, it talks about an individual mandate. Now, everybody knows you can have an individual mandate, I think everybody knows, and not have a criminal penalty for people that choose not to buy health insurance. But I think the desideratum in this is to try and create a system where everybody can have available health insurance that's affordable to them. And I mean, I think this is a health fund board, without really telling us how to do it, it seemed to me, created the model that we have to, in the next 6 years now, create a health system that has everybody in it, is effective and affordable, and has the workforce to support it. Without federal intervention, that's a wonderful goal, but is not likely to happen. but I think we ought to work towards it as if it's a useful goal, and that's what we've tried to create. I think even you buy that goal. Don't you, Mr. Vice Chair?
Yeah, I'll buy the goal. How much?
That's the problem.
So, Mr. Chair,
that's exactly the problem.
Are we leaving it and where it is? Is that the plan?
No, I think we should move. We should some way make sure M and A are consistent in terms of how we do it.
I think there really needs to be two sentences. One sentence is to examine the health, the insurance market, and that's you can't do that without talking about a mandate, an individual requirement. The other one is a policy statement of where you want the board to end up.
And we ought to make it clear that that's
they are different.
Yeah.
Can
you want to add one to this?
Actually, I think fits into this argument is that the insurance is not tied to your employment or employer, that the insurance is your insurance or your family's insurance, essentially blowing up the employer-centric system that we have. Because if you have an individual mandate, then you're going to carry that policy with you from employer to employer, from employer to unemployment, so that it's your policy, not your company's policy.
And the places where that's happened, it's always been financed by a payroll tax shared by employees and employers.
And
I'm not going to
necessarily disagree with that, but it needs to belong to you and not to your employer.
Absolutely. And the other item?
And the other item is state as self-insured. And I believe PEP is looking at self-insuring, but to examine that feasibility, maybe even on a little larger scale, because of OM.
Would you add some language to these two things?
To examine what? I'm sorry.
Self-insuring the state. For health, your health benefit plans.
For all?
Well, no, not for all, but for...
I haven't seen it.
PEB and OEP.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, that wasn't clear.
Okay.
It's not to me. Sorry.
Yes, sir, I will do that.
Okay.
I have a question about PEB and OEP. And back to the minimum basic coverage.
Basic.
Now, if we bring PEB and OEB into this, they're coming in where they are now.
That's right. There'll be a basic. So would Intel, if Intel came into play. They would buy the basic as a part of a must, and then they would layer on top of that whatever they wanted to buy, coverage they wanted.
I'm relatively sure that what PEB offers right now is somewhat more than what the basic would be.
Yeah, and so might it be for any company or anybody else that came into the plan. They would be required to have a plan that bought the basic. It would be optional to buy over that basic for whatever it is they wanted
to
cover.
So it's envisioned that public employees then would continue to have better insurance than the basic plan.
It would be the assumption that a great many people in the exchange would have better than the basic, would have not better, but more than the basic plan, more things covered.
Where I'm going with this, I mean, we move PEB in, and PEB people get up in the morning and find out they now have the basic plan, which is not what they've enjoyed up until now, and they're not going to be real happy about that.
Well,
to some extent, that happened with OEP. Some of the teachers are not happy with OEP because they do not have the coverage that they had before.
Well, that's a choice that their boards made because they have seven different options or something. One of which goes to a very complete option.
I'm just referring to unhappy teachers,
but
not how we got there.
But this is a very important point.
Yeah. Okay.
The concept of an exchange is that it offers to everybody a basic benefit package, an essential minimum, whatever that is, and then anybody else, individual or group, can buy optional coverage that includes more. It's exactly the Medicare market.
Well, the flip side of that then is if the eventuality should happen that public employees have to pick up part of their medical care.
That's going to happen one of these days.
Then is it also reasonable that a public employee under PEB coming into the system could say, I don't want PEB, I want the basic, which would be what might be less?
and they could save money by signing up for a lesser program, even though they've been a PEB member.
As this works now, that's a decision that comes either out of the negotiations with public employees or as a decision in the PEB board. So currently, we have a negotiation going on. The outcome of a negotiation would be the state pays for the basic benefit and employees pay for the rest. That could be, that might lead to a strike or something else, but those are matters that are collectively bargained, not matters that are involved here, unless we instruct something as a legislature to the people who bargain for us. I think Ron has a proposal to do that.
Several, in fact.
Yeah.
I was going to ask for a time check so I can go back to the tape. I'm kidding.
No, but I think, but the basic assumption about this is that the exchange provides a basic level of coverage that I think by essential, I think Representative Kotek is saying, is enough, and that there will be other optional models.
I'm anticipating when we do this, my phone will ring from one or two of my hundreds of state workers in my district asking the question, when PEB is absorbed into this, or now that PEB isn't, do I have the same coverage? And I would not want to have to say, actually, you don't have. We cut your coverage because you're right into this master plan, and but you'll learn to suck it up. You
know? And others at the table would like to say to them, yeah.
It's something that needs to be laid out as we do this. No surprises.
Yeah. Tom, let's roll on.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, continuing on page 11, point number two, this is the joint contracting, and starting down the path of trying to bring together all of government services by joint contracting health services for PEP, OEP, the cities and counties. Beginning in 2011, biennium.
So can I ask about that? This is Denver. So, you know, when you say city and county governments, you're talking about all governmental entities. I mean, that would include districts, et cetera.
Yeah. It really should be whatever the appropriate governmental entity, how you write that.
Need to add special or special districts.
It's all districts.
Or just districts.
All governmental employees.
Allow them to begin contracting. Now, that doesn't mean the... I mean, this doesn't necessarily say the counties must get in or not. It just gives the board the authority to begin those negotiations.
And then B under that just says, you know, if the authority, if the board, as they review the authority, feel there needs to be some reorganization, subject obviously to approval by the governor and whether you guys want to pay for it or not, they can reorganize the authority. Point three is asking for it gives the board.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. On this fee, I guess the control is with the governor rather than the legislature. Then, I mean, they can radically reform their purpose. Is that what this does?
That's not what it's done. It's designed. That's not what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be if the board says we need to put more focus in public health, they could put more focus in public health.
Well, this is reorganizing authority.
Yeah, just reorganizing.
They could take public health and move it under Medicaid. Yeah, it gives them the authority. The next one talks about what needs to be done statutorily, and it gives the authority the direct ability to submit legislation.
Right, right. This specifically gives them the authority to pre-session file bills. The October 1st date in there is what we have heard from Ramona or somebody is the date that you have to have. That was, I don't understand that, but that's why that October 1st date is in there.
So Tom, does B then relate to things that are not statutory? It gives the board discretion to do things that are not covered statutorily, but things that are statutory requirements, they would have to go to the
authority DHS has not, for example. DHS can reorganize
to a certain extent.
Within its statutory within its authority. Authority.
Right. Yeah, it's not eliminating any of the current protections that are there.
I still have some questions about the authority of the governor there. In terms of, you know, I fully trust this particular governor, but I'm not sure about the next one.
If this is stock language. Every department that reports through to the governor, every department has the authority to do this subject to the approval of their boss. So the agent, the authority reports to the governor. The board is a part of that process, but the authority reports to the governor.
We'll accept your assurance that the next governor will be 100% on board here.
I'm afraid I can't offer that to you because so many of my friends are running for governor.
On page 12.
I know better.
On page 12, numbers 4, just says if you need federal approval to request waivers or whatever from the federal government board, go off and get those approvals. And number 5 says, and this is boilerplate language, council says this is in every authorizing legislation that creates a new governmental entity, that just because you list powers doesn't mean that they don't have more powers.
Isn't that the problem with government in general?
Strike that. Mr. Chair, actually, there is something that I think that we left out that was part of Senate Bill 329 and not part of the Health Fund Board report, was that the Oregon Health Authority should have some ability or some language to evaluate what it's doing. And so I just lifted a section out of Senate Bill 329 about evaluation, and I'll pass it around. Sorry, Sandy, I went the wrong way. It's less about the specific items or the laundry list of things, but that they need to have some specific things to evaluate against. In fact, I don't think I have enough.
Can we hold this then?
We can hold it.
Let's hold it. Let's get it on the table. No, that's fine. Let's put it in now. And let's put it on the table when we go through what we have to talk about what else ought to be added.
That's fine.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, on page 13, we've added to the original bill a new section that defines the minimum essential basic health benefit package.
Whatever it's called.
The board with DCBS shall develop and approve one or more standardized, evidence-based health benefit plans for use in an individual small business and large group markets. And then, in addition for doing in business in this state, that must be offered in the marketplace commencing 12 months after the approval date, and that has to do with how plans get approved. It's a 12-month date.
We've had some interesting discussions with DCBS over the question of making coherent the business that takes place in the exchange with the business that takes place in the health insurance market generally. And their advice is that you need to have a coherent way to standardize what's happening in the health insurance market if you're going to try and create an exchange that has any impact. And
this is why we should
get into some discussions around that.
Yeah, what happens to our existing insurance mandates once this insurance exchange, once a basic benefits package is defined? Does that basic benefits package need to incorporate what we've adopted into law already as requirements for insurance plans, or?
I think that's a discussion.
Okay.
That's a discussion.
Yeah, I think that's a discussion. My guess is that this will trigger a look at all the insurance mandates that we've done to get some
I mean, I would assume this would be to get some sense of which of those need to be in an essential benefit package and which don't.
Because it's not
going to be an important discussion.
It's not just benefits. Mandates are also provider mandates. And so.
Right. And that's helpful. Then my other question relates to the existing work on a, and I don't know much about this subject, but we have a prioritized list, right? Is this how the conversations about a basic benefits package, will they build on the work that's been done over many years in this state, and I think done well, to try to identify, build a sort of prioritized list?
I think that's really a neat question. When we implemented the prioritized list to begin with, there was a serious proposal debated in the legislature to make the benefit package the legislators got consistent with the health plan. There was hope by doing that, the commercial insurance market would begin to take some of that into it. There hasn't been a single move in that direction. So, I mean, I think that's a question that's going to come up again. But it's basically, up till now, only been a Medicaid question. But it's an important question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, that's where the words evidence-based health came in, because that was built around a program to develop those that prioritized list based on the evidence-based.
Sort of, yeah.
Just if we have a, I don't know if it should nod towards, I don't even know which, I can't remember the commission or agency that's involved in the maintenance of that.
The Health Resources Commission.
No, the Health Services Commission.
The Health Services Commission, which will be pulled into the authority.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Then,
yeah.
All right.
Mr. Chair, it's Bruin. Would the writing of the language here necessarily inhibit or prohibit any what I would call unique insurance methods that we've talked about recently? I'm thinking specifically, Vice Chair Maurer, of HSAs. And with this, and I don't know, it's not a leading question, I'm worried about that happening, and of course don't want that to happen.
Well, I think it was
everything on the table.
It was interesting. I asked Ms. Kapowicz today, how did it turn out that there's a health HSA in OWIB and not an HSA in PEP? And it was an interesting answer. The answer was the statute that created OWIB required the availability of comparable plans to what had been offered in school boards before. So they surveyed the school boards and they found something like 180 different plans, and they sifted through those plans and tried to sort them, and then created seven plans that they thought nine plans that they thought and made available every one of those plans, and they gave the individual districts the ability to choose four out of that nine. Because there were individual plans that had HSAs in it, they crafted a model that did that. It turns out about 250 out of 30,000 people have taken an HSA plan in the first round, but that's an interesting issue. But I mean, somehow I think you're going to have to take, as they're designing an essential benefit package, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it would seem to me they might figure out innovative ways to make different options available, including that model, I would think.
Mr. Chair, this is Kotek. So the 10A section, I know what you're trying to achieve there, but if you go back to page 10 in section I, where we had the discussion about basic, minimum, essential, whatever, so it says that the benefit package, as defined in section 10A, so we go to 10A, I think we might just have to work on this a little bit. I don't see the definition there. What I see is the board's going to work with DCBS to come up with a standardized evidence-based health benefit plan.
Right.
So your benefit package, plan. I'm not sure that this is quite the same thing as defining what the package is. So we might just have to work on 10A, but if that's the only spot we define.
It is the only spot.
It is the only spot.
Yeah.
And it just, I just, so are we to infer that benefit package equals an evidence-based health benefit plan? As determined by DCPS and the board? I don't know. I just have questions.
I don't know either. I don't know the answer. That's good. Okay, let's mark this one with asterisks and see what we need to do.
Mr. Chair, we are now leaving the board and moving into the authority. And this is two pages, 14 and 15.
We don't have any problem finishing the rest of this pack in 15 minutes.
I'm here as long as you want me here.
No, I mean, let's keep plowing, but yeah. I do intend to adjourn at 5. It's clearly we need to begin to schedule more time, and we'll work on scheduling that Monday.
Section 10 was a big section, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a couple other big sections. Although,
I'm an optimist.
When is discussion on the provider tax and all that?
That comes much later.
Do you want to okay. No, I don't want to go there. That's I want to make sure we don't go there. Okay, let's keep going.
Okay, the authority is established. The authority shall do the following. Carry out the policies, establish the Quality Care Institute. The exchange is struck because you'll find it showing up elsewhere.
This is the department we're talking about.
This is the department, yes. Administer the prescription drug program, provide regular reports, guide and support the board, community-based health centers, initiatives, and define access to critical risk factors. Be the state Medicaid agency. Have to designate them as that. And here's the controversy: regulate the transaction of health policies sold or renewed in this state on or after January 1 of 2011 with respect to rates and the enforcement of rating rules.
And the controversy is moving this over from DCBS to the authority. And we heard testimony on this one.
Is there a combination of controversy, both from a practical standpoint and a functional standpoint, or a policy standpoint?
I think we have a way. We spent some time today with DCBS. I think we have a way to make it more practical, so it becomes a policy option rather than a functional option.
Is this a conflict? Is the authority establishes its own publicly owned insurance program?
Well, the exchange will do that. I mean, and this is where we wanted to try and make sure the authority creates the regulations, everybody in the exchange operates under those regulations. I think that's a concern, and we need to make sure we protect that concern.
I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure how you get there. I mean, it's the fox watching the hen house, and if the fait accompli is to have ultimately a public plan that everybody's under,
that's not the fait accompli. Fait accompli is to have a public plan that's an option for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can achieve that in a controlled market, there hasn't been a single proposal nationally yet. I mean, not a serious proposal that eliminates competition among insurance programs. The Minnesota has a model like that, for example. The objective is to have a fair playing field for the public and the private plans to operate the same way. And you mentioned tax status. I mean, I'm not sure how that's...
Well, if you have an entity that pays taxes and you have a government entity that doesn't pay taxes, then how do you level the playing field?
You have an entity that pays taxes on its profits, not on its business. That's exactly the example. If you were going to charge a tax on premiums, there's a perfect example. You would charge that tax on premiums of both the public and the private entity. That's the kind of level.
Because you normally don't tax. Governments don't tax. Oregon wouldn't tax DAS.
Might tax safe. Oregon might tax safe for if it had an operation tax. I mean, if it had a tax that.
the health insurers want to make sure
they tax everything.
That's right.
Just the guy behind the tree. I think we need to find a model. If we want a model that has private insurance in it at all, we want to find a model that they're all operating under the same rules. All the competitors are operating under
the same rules. What would be the downside, and I'm asking this not from a position standpoint, but of leaving this authority with DCBS? The health authority just doesn't have this piece. Instead of moving it over, we don't move it over. Why is it so important to have this moved over?
The concept that underlies what the health fund board was talking about was to put all the health care responsibility into a single place so it could be coordinated rather than having it split between departments. The notion that Dr. Goldberg said, for example, that when he would move the authority out of DHS, some things would remain in DHS and provide services to the authority. I think we see the same thing happening in this case, that CBS would be providing services to the authority that would be doing rate regulation and would be figuring that inside the context of all the other things it does.
Okay, I don't remember the UCBS being enthusiastic about this, is why there is a massive question.
I think DCBS will be less concerned when we continue to talk to them and work out in a way that makes sense to them. Their administrators in the room here watching us like a hawk to make sure we don't do anything to...
They turn kind of red, though.
I have the advantage of not knowing who's in the room, so...
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I really have problems with approval of rates. I think DCBS works in approval of rates through a very complex system that's through all kinds of insurance, and that was part of the argument previously. It seems that this is more in terms of dictating rates than approval of rates. It's a very different process and a very different authority, and it seems to me implicit in this is that authority.
Explicit in this is that authority. Yeah, no, explicit in this is that when you say you have the approval, the rate approval, that means you have the right to reject the rate.
Or to set it.
Well, set it's a different issue.
Yes, Mr.
Even under the most rigorous one, on the Public Utility Commission, they don't set rates. They say, no, you can't have that rate. That's too high. Try again.
And Rep. Kennemer raises the fear that I've had all along and voiced earlier, which is the 1% less than the city's CPI, and if this is how we get to that.
Well, it's
what is by other than the data.
Right.
Of course, we're just developing that, not establishing it, so.
This is Denbrough, so we could probably mark this as still something that maybe has some controversy around it.
This is important policy decision.
I think we all agree, maybe we all agree, that the policy around this should be under the authority, but there are questions about the implementation of it, or...
The points have been brought up. The whole concept of price controls is historically... unsound, and this is inherent. We're creating a situation where, in fact, it is a price control, and the only way you deal with price control is to maintain. If you have a CPI threshold that you need to meet, is to reduce reimbursement to providers who cut services or you cut benefits. I mean, that's kind of how government deals with the budget problem.
Or you say to an insurer that you're coming in, you have surpluses excess of what you need, and use some of your surpluses to offset some of this rate. Or say the opposite. Your rate is too low to maintain the surpluses we believe you need, and you need to raise it. A case in point was Blue Cross, Regions now in with a Blue Cross rate increase of 27%, And the reason they're here with 27% is they didn't raise their rates sufficiently. In fact, they cut their rates 2 years ago beyond what was prudent to do. And if I were regulating it as a person, I would have told them 2 years ago, you shouldn't do that, because you're going to end up 2 years from now with a 27% rate increase because it's inevitable. I mean, those are the kind of discussions, it seems to me, the Public Utility Commission actually ends up having. I don't think we've managed to starve out our utilities where we've had somebody looking at rate regulation in a policy context. Now,
your residential ratepayers aren't paying $1,200 a month. You're paying, it's a completely different level of financial investment than your industrial payers.
I expect I'm not paying too much off of that in some months.
Mr. Chair? Can you remind us, is this expanding the scope of rate regulation, or is it just relocating the function?
That's a good question.
We do some under existing. We'll have some evidence on it, and we'll get Ms. Streisinger back in. But the fact is, it is likely, and the reason we're doing it is likely that a health authority would have a different set of criteria in dealing with rates. Solvency would be an important one. Surplus would be, reserves would be an important one, but there would also be policy implications that would come into this as well. So I think that the only reason you move it is to change the dynamic of the game, if it was something you stick your rate into a machine and out pops your answer, which is not what I'm saying DCBS does, but if it were that, it wouldn't matter where that machine set.
Do we do rate approval for all health insurance? I just don't remember. I know we had a presentation on this.
The only thing we're changing is the regulated insurance, which is about 40% of the people are in. We don't do any rate regulation or mandate or anything else for self-insured plans. We don't do Medicaid. We do it for the insurance companies that come under the definition of regulated. It's called regulated benefit. Regulated, what's the word?
We actually regulate rates for individual and small group, but not large group.
That's what I thought. Not large group.
Yeah.
So as I read this, this would be a change there. We would be regulating large group under this language.
Kenmore, I also think, though, you're also putting it in an agency who has a goal that's much larger than regulation of the insurance entity. I would love it if you would give me control of Farmers auto insurance for approval of rates, because I don't much like the rate I pay. But my decision would be biased based on being a ratepayer rather than, and if we're not careful, we try to achieve that by doing the very thing you talked about. If we give rate authority here, then we have an entity setting rates unrealistically because of the outcome they're hoping to achieve. And that's not a very objective process for figuring what reserves need to be.
I'm not sure why you can make that assumption. I mean, there is a paranoid model of the world. But the assumption is when you have an agency whose job, whose responsibility is to have a healthy healthcare system, you would assume that they would be using judgment about things like health insurance rates as the same as they would about any other components of the healthcare system.
I guess I would say when cost containment and costs are the most fundamental issue and rates are one of the ways you can achieve that, you have an enormous conflict of interest.
We start from the assumption that there are four objectives. Yes. Increase access, bend the cost curve, deal with quality, and include the workforce. Bending the cost curve means changing the way health care is structured and delivered. It doesn't mean taking money away from one person and giving it to another. We are at the time to change. One thing that really comes to mind, Tom, in this is as we talk to LC, it's going to be very important to break out the amendments that are basically boilerplate amendments that are uncontroversial from the amendments that will be specifically taken a vote on. Like this one. This is a significant policy decision, not to bury it in a big set of amendments, but to have it so it can be debated individually. And we'll schedule more time for this. This feels very valuable to me. I think we're...
Yeah, I agree.
We more understand where we are, and we have a long way to go with this as well.
And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say, I actually had another comment in this section, so if we could start back here and not move on to sub 2.
Start back at the top of page 14.
If we could, because I'll hold my comments on that.
Yep, let's do that. We'll start back on the top of page 14.
Okay.
Hold on.
We have some written testimony that I'd like to acknowledge for the record. One is from Joe Czar, and the second document is from Michael Huntington that I will pass around to you.
An introduction? Yeah. Sorry, I was rude not to make sure.
Oh.
We didn't introduce somebody sitting at the table the last 2 hours. Banco sitting over here at the table. Would you please?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, my name is Rasha Quill, and I'm going to be helping Sandy while she's administering.
More staff.
Great.
You guys are so demanding. I need more staff.
Thank you. I really apologize for being so rude and not introducing you to begin the process.
Absolutely.
Are we adjourned? Yeah. We get a little extra help, and thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Does anybody want to?